You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 7th of October. Our first look at the Jazz, a bit against the Adelaide 36ers. John Hollinger is not as optimistic about your Utah Jazz. And we sit down and you get to know Ed Davis. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it more fun for you to be a Jazz fan. Super appreciate you tuning in. We got to see the Jazz in person for the first time, and we will dig into that as much as there's not that much to dig into. John Hollinger, now writing for The Athletic. I will share with you what he had to say about the Jazz, so you don't have to go behind the paywall. And he's not that optimistic, so we'll explain that to you coming up. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Locked On at checkout. All right. So bottom line is with Adelaide, it's really hard to tell. Okay, that's the first, I think, before we make any judgment, statement, comment, I think you have to just put a huge caveat on it. The shot distribution by the Jazz was incredible. They only took four long twos in the entire game, and then they went 8 of 12 on floaters because there's no rim defense by Adelaide. So the Jazz shot 40-plus shots at the rim, 44 threes, and shot distribution was just awesome. In fact, based on shot distribution alone, if everyone had just shot average, the Jazz would have won by 20. So that's pretty good. What jumped out to me most is having been at every day of training camp is just when the Jazz ran their stuff, they were fine. You know, we can go look at every individual player and like I loved Royce O'Neal's six assists and some of those kind of things. But really what jumped out to me is when they ran their stuff and stayed disciplined, they got what they wanted. There was a beautiful back cut by Bojan Bogdanović. I think it was a Jeff Green pass, if I remember correctly, and Jeff had one assist, so hopefully that's right. Those were signs to me that the these guys had been paying attention, doing what they wanted, doing what they needed to do, and then they were playing somewhat of a skeleton against. I don't mean this like a dummy opponent, like as though they were there for as somewhat of a sacrificial lamb. The interesting thing was with Mike Conley not playing, Rudy Gobert not playing, Donovan Mitchell not playing. You ended up actually with four new guys starting with Joe Ingles. So Bojan, Jeff Green, Ed Davis, and then Nigel Williams-Goss because Emmanuel Mudiay came up sore, which is too bad because Mudiay is the one who needs this time. And that will be more important going forward, and hopefully he'll be all right. But he's the one who we've talked about a lot, holds kind of this key to the flexibility of the roster. Like if he can't play well enough to stay on the floor and be efficient, then a lot of the flexibility of this roster starts to fall apart. So he's super important just in regards to what it allows you to do with Dante if he gets healthy, what it allows you to do with Joe Ingles and what you don't have to do otherwise on a team that obviously gave up some depth this offseason in how it got picked up Mike Conley and then spent money and things of that nature, which is it's how you get five of the top 60 players in the NBA on your rosters. You have to give up some of the depth that they have. I was very interested in Bojan's passing, as I have been all training camp. So the question I had coming in about Bojan is, quite honestly, is like what's his pig level? Like, is he a guy that's interested in passing and involving teammates and things of that nature? The fact is that he has made an incredible effort in training camp to pass the basketball, keep people engaged, try to figure out how he's going to find Rudy and do all of those kind of things. And then he passed the ball a ton the other night. He ended up with four assists. He only had two assists last year per game. The year before that, he only had one. So, I mean, there was a real question about him of when he just came off the bench, if he was there just to shoot it. You're not, you know, you're making your money from scoring in this league, but he showed some versatility in that regard, understand the offense, didn't open the game shooting particularly well. Could have been the altitude, kind of that first hit of, oh, wow, that's real here. But he did have four assists by the time the day was done, and more importantly, he is interested in passing. The Jeff Green question mark I had is Jeff Green likes to settle himself with a dribble. That's always been how he's played. You can't really settle yourself with a dribble on this team. You either have got to be out ahead of it and make your play before you get the ball in your mind, or get out and make that. He seemed to do that very, very well too. He runs. He's still at 33 years old. He's still an incredible athlete. So he got out and ran a few times. He did hit two threes. He did get two steals, but he got out and ran. We saw Ed Davis's offensive rebounding. That's kind of his game. And then Joe did his thing. I thought, you know, if there was a standout thing for me in this game, it was something I've talked about the entire camp, which is the multiple ball handlers that this team has. And that I thought was really, really evident. I mean, I think we had about every guy who played other than Tony Bradley of the primary guys had an assist. I'm not sure Stanton Kidd or William Howard had an assist, but everybody else had an assist. Everybody but Ed Davis, Rudy Gobert, and Tony Bradley can handle and bring the ball up the floor and initiate the offense and start things. That should accelerate our pace. It should get us into the front court earlier in possessions, and it should open up just more opportunities in the offense. You know, in a lot of ways, I didn't see much of anything in this game I haven't seen in training camp, because Adelaide's not as good as the Jazz second team when they're scrimmaging. And so there's not a lot more to take out of it. The things I'm talking about, Jeff Green's ability to play without settling himself, Boyan's passing, Royce O'Neal's overall game, the multiple ball handlers are all things we've seen throughout training camp. And Adelaide was less of a, you know, probably less of a factor than training camp. Mia One, who I like a lot, I thought looked the part. Like, I don't know if he'll play this year. On Nate Duncan's podcast, I made the comment that I thought, you know, if someone was going to surprise, it's him. I do think if he gets time, he'll be fine. He looks the part. He's worked really hard to get a quick release in that corner three and change that. The other one I just wanted to point out, and you'll see it, you saw it before the game with him warming up on the floor, you'll see it. Dante has really, really worked hard on his shot, and it looks really different. A lot of credit to Dante. It looks noticeably different, which is hard for, you know, then when he gets tired and things like that, it's going to be hard for him to not revert back. But he went really hard after shoot around on Friday Saturday, with Jeff Watkinson, the assistant coach, and he has really worked awfully hard. I talked to Dante about it, and basically he couldn't jump for so long, so he just worked on taking shots from the three-point range, and as a free throw, basically. So, like, learning how to connect his body in that manner, in a way that he had not done, you know, that it was probably a disconnect before. So pretty interesting and huge amount of work on his part. And when we see him, hopefully you'll notice it right away. And again, hopefully it will translate. All right, those are my thoughts. John Hollinger of The Athletic wrote about the Jazz, and he's not as optimistic as the rest of us about what's going on. Make a memory last a lifetime. Let Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter the promo code KICKOFF and check at checkout. Receive a discount of up to $100. Murdoch Chevy has got a car you should go check out. I'm driving it right now. It's the Blazer. So they have redone and remember the old great Trailblazer? Like, if you're old like me, you totally remember the Trailblazer. So Chevy has relaunched the Blazer. I'm driving it right now. It's fun. I'm super impressed by just kind of how both the Equinox and the Blazer that I drove, how much this your own, I don't know if driving compartment just feels like you have space and you're comfortable, and you're like, you know, it's quiet. It's well put together. Like, it feels great. It's the mid, they're calling it their mid-sized SUV crossover. And it's the Chevy Blazer starting at $28,800. Pretty cool car. I mean, seats up to five, still has towing ability if you need it. It's a neat addition to the Chevy lineup, and I'm really enjoying it. You can get it at Murdoch Chevy. Murdoch has been in the market for 90 years selling Chevrolet to Utah. Chevy is, you know, it's Americana. And the Murdochs have been doing that as well, making sure you have the no regrets experience. Obviously, when you head over to Murdoch Chevy and see the crew over there, you also have their great SUV lineup with the Silverado, the trucks, the Silverado and the Colorado, and the SUV, the Suburban, the Tahoe. The Traverse is a good eight-seater for you, and then there's the Equinox and the 2020 Blazer. Go check it out. I'm really enjoying it. Drives beautifully. Great. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, the driving capsule is just really kind of cool. So John Hollinger was the grandfather of stats. He was the kind of the leader of the whole stats analytics. Dean Oliver wrote the book Basketball on Paper, and then John Hollinger wrote Hollinger's Predictive and Hollinger Stats and PER and built all these stats for ESPN. And then he went on to be the general manager of the Memphis Grizzlies, and he's now back writing in the media, and well, you know, all sorts of other things coming this direction for John, who's a fabulous dude. He just wrote his Northwest Division preview. He had the Thunder at 35-47, Minnesota at 38-44, Portland at 41-41, and he has the Denver Nuggets winning the division at 52-30. He estimates each player's plus minus per 48 by using four all one in metrics, he says. He then age adjusts each rating for the coming season. Then he adds a dollop of subjective special sauce for significant injuries. And he works from there. He says, I have to look at the mid-case scenario of all teams. We can't assume your best player will all play all 82 and that your rookie will make an immediate impact. So he's taking the mid-level expectation of your team. And for Denver, he makes some interesting points. He has them winning the Northwest at 52-30. He has the key to their season, somebody beating out Will Barton for small forward. And probably how Paul Millsap plays. But they have a great roster. They were super last year. They have a superstar player in Nikola Jokic. I've said this before. I think Denver, Houston, and Utah are the teams competing for the number one seed. But John has them at 52-30. He is not as optimistic about the Jazz. The Jazz, he says, may have had the most interesting offseason of any team. I'm not sure it was the best, mind you, but definitely the most interesting. Okay? He says that he thinks Utah bet on fit over talent. In other words, moving Derek Favors, as he thinks is probably a better player than Bojan Bogdanović. He, along with everybody else in the world, thinks that the Jazz will not like Bojan Bogdanović's contract by the end. He does say that the offense has been turbo-boosted, the starting five ceiling, but that acquiring Conley via cap space left significant gaps and little money for which to fill them. That was a point he had earlier. Denver actually has the most flexibility of any team in regards to acquiring talent. Denver's really primed to get Bradley Beal if they want it, if they're willing to put the package deal together. He says they've put a massive pressure on Gobert defensively to be a one-man force field against all things inside the charge circle. Replacing Favors with Bogdanović is a pretty stark downgrade on that and leaving near zero rim protection and rebounding support for Gobert. His point is, considering the other four starters for the Jazz, and he has Ingles starting in this scenario, the Jazz, their rebounding rate is 26.5, so Gobert would have to lead the league in rebounding rate for the Jazz to just break even overall. Rebounding is going to have to be a major collective effort. Donovan's going to have to be very involved in it for the Jazz to survive. There's no, John's exactly right on that. He says the bench will be worse too. So John's not as, like, my numbers have us as healthy, no injuries involved, and complete health, battling for the number one seed with the LA Clippers, who also, in the case, have no injuries involved. Kevin Pelton has us as the number one defensive team in the Western Conference, fourth overall. John doesn't quite come back to say we aren't going to be defensively, but he does say he is concerned that we're going to have to rely on Jeff Green way too much. Makes a little jab at himself for a trade he made somewhere. That's quite funny. And then digs into the absolute lack of depth behind Conley and Mitchell, which is totally real. Like, we just don't know if Dante can play. We don't know if Nigel Williams-Goss can play. We don't know if Emmanuel Mudiay can play at what level. Now, the answer from the Jazz would be, well, then we just roll Donovan as the backup one with Joe Ingles and we'll be fine. But that's where I talked about earlier. If Mudiay can't play very well, the flexibility of this roster gets thin. His final paragraph is, overall, shaky depth likely suppresses the Utah regular season win total enough to deny it postseason home court advantage. But come playoff time, with the top seven players getting all the run, this team could be much more potent. At very least, it won't go down in a hailstorm of bricks like it did last year. This is really interesting, because this is the opposite of what I have thought and many other people have thought, which is, wow, we're going to be a really good regular season team, and do we have enough talent to get through the postseason? If you were to ask me about us, I somewhat think we could be Milwaukee of last year. Win the number one seed, and then not have enough talent and superstar ability to get through the playoffs. I could make that argument. It's interesting. So he brings a very different approach. And I think if you're reading this as a non-Jazz fan, it's totally fair. You know, you hear it as a Jazz fan, you want to fight it and have it not be true because you don't want it to be true that we could, like, if we won four, if I told you we're going to win 49 games right now, if every time I walked around town and someone said, "Are you excited for the season?" I said, "Yeah, I think we're going to win 49 games," you'd freak. Now, that's mid-level, but that's what, you know, less than last year. Everybody else got really good too. Houston got better, Clippers got better, Lakers got better, Denver got better. Golden State didn't. Okay, Sacramento might have got better. Though Sacramento Kings fans should be really nervous about the pick and roll numbers of Dwayne Dedman and Trae Young compared to Trae Young and Alex Len, because maybe Dwayne Dedman is an absolute defensive sieve. But this is interesting. And I do think in our euphoria of heading toward the season, we have not addressed a ton of these things a lot because we want to address the others. The secondary rim defender is something I do strongly believe in. I'm not sure who has it, frankly, anymore. But I do think that Derek Favors had great value as a secondary rim defender. And what I mean by that is that you pull Gobert out and Favors is still there. But a little of that is crap, because they only played the first 6 minutes together, right? Like, we keep doing this, and I keep getting back to, as much as we all talk about this, you know, Favors and Gobert played the first 6 minutes together in all the games they played. And if you dig into those numbers, when you look at this, here I am. I'm now suddenly undone by John Hollinger and starting to defend where we are. And I get into this because there's some interesting notes on the Favors-Gobert issue, that our love for Favors, which is completely justified because of who he is as a person and a player, it was just a bad fit. Like, he's going to be great in New Orleans because he's their starting center, but we already have a starting center. The other thing that is just incredibly misleading about the Favors-Gobert number, the defensive numbers were great, but the free throw rate by opponents in that time period was 12.6, in the 99th percentile, in the best in the entire league, because it only played the first 6 minutes of the first and third quarters when no one was in the bonus. Certainly they didn't foul a lot. That's true, because they're both so big. But the reason they were so great defensively largely is because they were it's easier to defend in the first 6 minutes of the first and third quarters. And so their defensive rating, which is in the 99th percentile, to me is a little misleading. Now, they're also always playing starters, which is kind of the flip side of it. But Gobert, without Favors, was still in the 91st percentile, but the free throw rate was at 20.3, which is in the 44th percentile. If we put that same free throw rate on Favors and Gobert, their defense is the exact same. So we'll see, obviously, and you know maybe Jay Crowder, who came out terribly in plus-minus defense last year, is a better defensive player than we want to realize. But there are just some narratives that our love for Derek as a person, which is 100% justified, is just, it's not accurate, that are floating around here a little bit. The other one, by the way, that is just not particularly accurate is the offense with Favors was in the 53rd percentile last year. Without Gobert, was in the 53rd percentile. Okay, so it was average. Great. That's good. However, when they were on the floor with Gobert and Favors, just to remind everyone, since we seem to be yearning for it somewhat, the offense was in the 12th percentile. And when the offense was Rudy without Derek, the offense was in the 85th percentile. 12th, 50th, 85th. We'll see. Just a thought or two. All right. So I became defensive Jazz fan there for a second. Ed Davis will be a key to a large part of this because he'll have to defend those moments where we used to have Derek on the floor for the second team defense, which was really good last year. Okay, so on that one, let's give Derek his due. He was healthy last year. He was really good. I'm very curious, by the way, to see how Derek does playing 30 minutes a night. I'm not sure his body still does that. That will be interesting. But the defense last year when Derek was on and Rudy was off was really good. It was in the 92nd percentile, and that's what Ed Davis is going to have to do. We will talk with him in just a second and learn a little bit about Ed Davis. Today's show brought to you by Homie. The people at Homie are doing fun and exciting things. And one of them is revolutionizing the real estate market. I've told you about how Homie can sell your house, set price of $1,500. Well, now Homie can also buy any of your homes. I know, funny, bright, teal billboards, but underneath that's a company that sells and buys houses and saves you thousands of dollars. A Homie agent will take you, tour your dream house, make offers, negotiate the deal, and then work to get you $5,000 back at the end. You can also go to homie.com and request a tour of any home for sale with a click of a button. Your dedicated Homie agent will meet you there in person. A lot of people think it's free to buy a home. That's not true. It's your money. You pay for your home is used to pay the seller, their agent, and whatever agent you choose to hire. It's money that pays both agents. It's your money, by the way, that pays both agents. Homie is returning you $5,000 for that. It's simple. Get started, Homie. Text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. Time for Get to Know with Ed Davis.
The best gift I was ever given. I mean, since I got to the NBA, you know, most people stopped giving me gifts.
All right, let's get to know Ed Davis. If you took me back to your hometown, what would you show me?
I'll show you a lot. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia. You know, we got a lot of historic stuff. We got some good restaurants, you know, some outdoor stuff. You know, show you some different things.
Your dad played a little in the NBA. Then what was your birth order? Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have an older sister. She's 16 months older than me.
So you guys, I'm guessing, competed a little bit every now and then?
Not really, because my sister always, like, she always treated me like the little brother. You know, like, she was always, like, older than me. I mean, obviously older, but more, like, mature and smarter than me and always a step ahead. So, you know, she always, you know, kept me in my place. So it wasn't really a lot of competition between us.
If you took me back to Richmond, Virginia, and you went back to your childhood room, mm-hmm. What would I see in your childhood room?
My childhood room. So growing up, you know, my mom, you know, she spoiled me. So, you know, she always, you know, made my room up and made the bed up and things like that. So I sort of had it easy. So my room was pretty much always clean. You know, I didn't have a TV in my room. I just had a bed. You know, I was always outside. So my room was
Any posters on the wall?
No posters.
Mom didn't want that.
She didn't really care. I was always outside. The only time I was in my room was literally to go to sleep. I was never like, I wasn't really a big video game guy or somebody that's just going to stay in the room all day. I hated being inside.
Who's the first coach or first person that saw your talent and your skills and kind of said, hey, let's go?
I'll probably say, other than family, because my family always believed in me from day one, but I'll probably say Boo Williams. You know, I remember, you know, he came to my high school my ninth grade year, and, you know, he said he wanted me to play with the AAU program, and, you know, he expected me to be a McDonald's All-American, expected me to, you know, go to a major Division I program, and, you know, he expected me to, you know, make it to the NBA. And, you know, as a ninth grader, you know, coming from somebody who had, you know, a lot of respect and, you know, been around a lot of NBA guys, you know, it meant a lot.
Check, check, check. You knocked them all off.
Right.
Who was the toughest on you?
The toughest? My dad. My dad, I'll say by far, you know, just because, you know, he been there before, you know, the NBA and the grind, and, you know, he came from a Division II school from a small town with, you know, a couple thousand people. So, you know, he really got it, you know, out the mud. So, you know, growing up, you know, he always, you know, kept me hungry, you know, even though, you know, he was in the NBA, you know, he didn't spoil me. You know, I didn't have, you know, everything growing up. I had, you know, one pair of shoes, you know, I had just enough to get by. And, you know, at the time, I really didn't understand it. But, you know, growing up, you know, now I see, and, you know, that's why I have the hunger that I have, you know, till this day.
Whose praise means the most to you?
Whose praise? Ooh. Honestly, I don't know. Like, I mean, that's the hard to say, because whatever I do, like, I don't really do it for the recognition. You know, I'm playing basketball right now because I love doing it, and you know, I want to win. You know, I have enough money, so it's not the money. I don't want to be famous, so it's not the fame. It's, I actually, you know, I love, you know, the team bond. I love being a part of the team. You know, I love, you know, having a head coach. Like, it's just more, you know, I just do it for the love of the game, honestly, right now.
You figured out this head coach might be a little different than some of the other guys you've met?
I mean, all the coaches I had in the last, like, 4 or 5 years, you know, been weird, so nothing's going to change.
You have some body art, we can see. What is it? You want to share some of what you have and what's most important to you?
Honestly, you know, I got these tattoos at a young age, and if I could do it again, I wouldn't have one tattoo. So, yeah, I got all these. I got my first tattoo. I was in the ninth grade, and I was young. Got addicted to, you know, the tattoos, and that's why I'm covered up. If I can do it again, I wouldn't have one tattoo.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
You mentioned the team kind of togetherness. What do you think makes a good basketball culture inside of a team?
I think it starts with, you know, your top players. They definitely have to be, you know, likable, unselfish guys. I think when you have that, then, you know, it's easy for everyone, you know, to fit in and, you know, put that really team first. But when, you know, you have, you know, selfish guys, you know, it can really affect the team.
Who's the best teammate you've ever played with?
Best teammate. Ooh. Best teammate. Man, I'm a journeyman, so I play with a lot of guys, man. It's my sixth star. I play with a lot of guys. The best, as a star, by far, is Damian Lillard. As a star, but say this as a, you know, a role player. Oh, best teammate, man.
He's running through the Rolodex of players he played with. That's an old phrase, by the way. Nobody even knows what Rolodex is anymore.
For sure.
I can give you a pass if you want a pass on that.
No, I want to answer this question. Best teammate. I'll probably say Evan Turner got to be up there, one of the best teammates I've played, just because, like, he brings a lot of like good energy to practice, to the locker room, to the games. Fun dude to be around. Like, I say he got to be up there.
I like it.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
For sure.
Appreciate it.
Thanks to Ed Davis. Our get-to-know schedule for the rest of the week, we'll probably do a live show Thursday morning from Milwaukee. So George Niang tomorrow, Bojan Bogdanovic on Wednesday, and then Jeff Green on Friday. Wednesday we play Milwaukee. Friday we play New Orleans. We jump on a plane tomorrow. It's all getting underway for you. Locked On NBA today. Josh Lloyd talks and checks in with three different teams around the NBA. And Josh Lloyd's Fantasy Basketball is the number one fantasy basketball podcast across the country. So go grab that one. It is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.